Immer kriege ich Werbung für Gabelstapler. Dabei bin ich Controllerin.
Erreichen Sie mit B2B-Werbung lieber diejenigen, die für Ihr Unternehmen wirklich zählen. Mit LinkedIn Ads erreichen Sie Ihre Zielgruppe, anstatt Budget durch Streuverluste zu verschenken. Nach Jobbezeichnung, Branche, Firmenname, Karrierestufe, Kenntnissen oder Unternehmensgröße. Jetzt die erste LinkedIn Ads-Kampagne starten. 200 Euro investieren und 200 Euro Guthaben für die nächste Kampagne sichern. Einfach auf linkedin.com/Aktion. Es gelten die allgemeinen Geschäftsbedingungen.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Knicks? What's happening? What's going on? How are we doing? Big week here for actors and Oscar-nominated talent. Yeah, it's a big week here. We're doing three episodes this week. Today I'm going to talk to Mark Ruffalo, who's great. He's great in that role, man. I don't know if you saw Poor Things, but he's astounding. It is one of the most brilliant comic roles I've ever seen in my life. And I like the guy. He's a great actor, always good, always has his own time zone, always has his own groove, his own pace, and has pretty big range, you know, from the sweetest, saddest to the Hulk, who I think arguably is sweet and sad as well. Maybe sweet and sad is his groove, but it was kind of amazing to talk to him today. He was obviously in the Poor Things. He's been in Zodiac, Spotlight, Foxcatcher, You Can Count on Me. And he's the Hulk. He's the good Hulk. He's the best Hulk. But that doesn't, on Wednesday, we're doing a special show. Well, it's not special. It's just an additional show with America Ferrara. On Thursday, I talked to Rodrigo Prieto. That's the cinematographer for Killers of the Flower Moon and Barbie and many more. First time I've had a cinematographer on, I believe. Thorough cinematography conversation. Amazing conversation. Big week. Today, Ruffalo. Wednesday, Ferrara. And Thursday, Prieto, whose name I've mispronounced in many different places. But man, what a great talk that was. But this is today. This is where we're at today. Today, Monday. This is what's happening. I'm sweating in my garage. I've been at it for a while. I recorded this yesterday. I did the guitar. I did an Instagram Live forever, which kind of loosens up my brain. I haven't really been doing them for over a month, but gets me in the zone of talking. I had some revelations. Had some revelations in conversation with the 300 or 400 people that were hanging out until I played guitar, and that turned to 150 people. I don't know how many people have looked at it. Now, it doesn't really matter. Sometimes I use it to engage the brain. Engage it in talking. And I don't know what's been going on with you, but, you know, I have this broken foot, and I think it's getting better. I'm trying very hard not to fuck it up more. I'm wearing the boot. I got two boots. I told you that. Switching them out so they don't get stinky. I'm not on any medicine because I'm not feeling any pain. I have been pumping the calcium because I thought, why not? Why not hit the calcium a little harder? And I don't do much research on the supplements. I'm just always thought like, you know, calcium, bones, right? So have the calcium. And I get this calcium magnesium. It's 1,000 mg, milligrams, I guess that would be, a day. And I swear to God, I don't know if it's healing my bone any quicker. And I don't know if this is even something calcium is supposed to do, but it's changed my entire digestive system. Is that possible? Am I making that up? I mean, yes, I'm vegan. And I never was really a big dairy person. I always felt like dairy, to me, dairy is like sludge, whether it's in the form of cheese, Greek yogurt, milk, cream, ice cream, which I like. I mean, there's obviously some dairy things I like, but I've always just pictured it as like I picture cheese to be the exact same consistency in your arteries. That's just the way I pictured it. But I do know that for some reason, taking the calcium has shifted something, and I like it. Now, I'm sure I'll get some feedback. I'm sure I'll get a lot of plus and minus feedback. Be careful with the calcium. It can grow another head. Be careful with the calcium. All your joints will seize up. Be careful with the calcium. That's worse than cheese in your heart. I don't know. You know, when you do research on this stuff, there's two sides to it all the time. But I do know physically something has shifted. And I'd like some feedback on that. Am I making that up? Am I being crazy? And also, the doc said that I'm healing quicker than usual, but I'm still worried that I'm going to, like, I was doing something the other night, you know, the thing you do at night, and my, you know, it's a little more difficult when you have a broken foot and it's in a boot to do the thing at night, you know, with your friend. And, you know, I felt like something tweaked, and I'm like, fuck, man, if I re-broke this foot, fucking, I'm going to be a little upset. And then I'll have to look at it in relation to, like, was that fucking worth the broken foot? Was that fucking worth the surgery? Right? I don't know. Too crass? TMI? It just happened. I cramped up. So, arguably, if I do need surgery, the fucking was not worth the fucking I was going to get with the surgery. Right? Anyway, listen to me. I have tour dates. Let's start here in Los Angeles. I added some more LA dates. I'm back at Largo on Wednesday, February 28th, and the Elysian on Thursday, February 29th. Portland, Maine, I'm at the State Theater on Thursday, March 7th. Hopefully, I'll be out of the boot. Medford, Massachusetts, at the Chevalier Theater on Friday, March 8th. Providence, Rhode Island, at the Strand Theater on Saturday, March 9th. Tarrytown, New York, at the Tarrytown Music Hall on Sunday, March 10th. Those shows are nearing sellout, except for Providence. So, you know, it's good. There's a good number of tickets sold for Providence, but it's a much bigger place than I played last time. I'm just hipping you to that, Providence. Atlanta, Georgia, I'm at the Buckhead Theater on Friday, March 22nd. That's close to sold out. Boise, Idaho, just added. I'm at the Egyptian Theater on Saturday, March 23rd as part of Comedy Fort at the Treefort Music Fest. Madison, Wisconsin, at the Barrymore Theater on Wednesday, April 3rd. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Turner Hall Ballroom on Thursday, April 4th. Chicago, at the Vic Theater on Friday, April 5th. Minneapolis, at the Pantages Theater on Saturday, April 6th. Austin, Texas, at the Paramount Theater on Thursday, April 18th, as part of the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for more tickets for the dates coming up later in the year. I can't read all of them. It'd take up the entire show. But why don't you do that if you want to come see me? As always, in my mind, this could be the last tour. And in the sense that I'm thinking about things. I'm thinking about my place in the world. You know, and I'm right on the edge of, you know, I've got no reason to be anything but grateful for the way my life has gone so far. It's not that it came easy. It's not that, you know, I didn't work my ass off and continue to work my ass off. It's not that I'm not satisfied in a lot of ways with my life. But, you know, you get a little older, you get to, I mean, maybe this is 60. I don't know. But you get to this point where you're teetering on that fine line between sort of reflection, realization, perception of who you are at this point in my life, and just a hint of self-pity, which is very unattractive. So I'm not going to say I'm feeling sorry for myself. I'm not going to say I'm being nostalgic, but I am sort of trying to be honest and reflective with myself. And I think it's happening. And it's not great. Not a great feeling. Like there's something going on with me where, like, okay, for instance, I was going to buy an apartment in New York. Now, when I was coming up as a comic and as somebody who was spending time in both cities, it was really a mark of some sort of success or tremendous life if you had a place in both Los Angeles and New York. So recently, in thinking about where I want to spend my last years, which is not an impractical way to think at 60. What do I want to do with the rest of it? I've worked hard my entire fucking life, despite what anyone thinks of this particular job or the job in show business. But I have a type of exhaustion in my bones. It's real and it's earned and it's not unusual. But, you know, I don't do vacations much. If you can sit in here and think about it with me, if you've been with me for a long time, how many times have I really taken a vacation? Definitely not once a year, and definitely not for very long. And a lot of them were quite stressful for one reason or another. It's just not my bag, the vacation. Just keep chipping away. So now I've chipped away since I was 21, 22 years old, maybe a little younger, in a very real way, with if it wasn't hands-on work, there was enough stress and activity and creative juice spent that is all part of the job. And it has all, you know, dug, you know, soaked deep into my bones, the type of exhaustion that happens naturally along with age. So when I was looking at the apartment in New York, I was really like gung-ho. And, you know, thank God the place just didn't work out for a couple of different reasons. There was no limit on the amount of time it would take to renovate the place that I was thinking about getting. It could have been up to 2 years, really, practically speaking, before I could even move into it. And then I'm thinking like, well, I'm going to be 62, 63 years old. And my fantasy was, I'll be in New York. It'll be amazing. There'll be people all around. I'll be able to eat like easily and just walk across the street. I'll hang out with friends. I'll go to shows. I'll go see jazz. I'll go to museums. And then there was that moment where like, I lived there for years and I didn't do any of those things. And who am I really? How many friends do I really have? When you are a solo guy, ish, you know, it's like everyone's got a life. Everyone's got their own life. You can't just sort of parachute in to a world and be like, what are you doing, man? Let's take a walk. What's going on? Let's go hang out at the coffee shop for 3 hours. I still can live that life to a degree. I don't do it because I have a house. But then I started to think like, dude, you know, if you were 40, 35, you know, this would be something. I don't even like doing comedy in New York City that much anymore. So, you know, what am I really doing? And then I realized that, well, that's fantasy, Mark. And that fantasy has been in place in a long time. And I think we all have these fantasy versions of ourselves that we see moving through a world that we're creating or an idea that we have about our future that is relieving and exciting, and you can see it unfold and there are moments. And I've sort of dealt with this in material before about moving to the country or whatever, you know, tell me, you know, what do I do on the third day? But, you know, your vibe and your groove and your frequency changes as you get older. And I just started to realize, like, you know, the possibility for extraordinary type of aggravated loneliness and reflection in New York City would have been profound, and that the version of me that was living there in my mind was not who I am now. And it was kind of a weird realization to have. And I'm having it about a lot of things. You know, I'm having this sort of what they term in the recovery racket as like some sort of convulsion of right-sizedness in relation to my comedy career, in relation to you know, what I've given to the world in relation to my peers and all that stuff. And like getting right sized around all that stuff is, in terms of kind of contracting the ego a bit to figure out what is fantasy. And then there's delusions. There are these things that you sort of hang on to that you think, you know, from early on in your life, like, you know, well, I'm still working towards this. This can still happen. You know, whatever it is, after a certain point, you're like, dude, that's a little delusional. I mean, not that that delusion didn't help you get to where you were going and where you ended up, but, you know, to think about it specifically, it's a little delusional to think that, you know, somehow or another, I'm going to change the way I do comedy so it has broader appeal, which sort of is part of my brain, and is delusional because I've done the best I can to have broader appeal without trying. But I insist in my mind that my comedy is so broad. But see, that's delusional. I do a specific thing that is rarefied in a way, and it's uniquely mine. And I was thinking about my last two specials, and I'm like, that's the best I can do, man. You know, even the one before that, even more later. I mean, this is the top of my game. You know, all of the artists that I've respected in my life outside of massive music acts have been sort of specific types. And you find your world and you work in that world and you express yourself as freely as possible and in the way you want. And that's what you do. You can't really change that. I'm talking to myself right now. So don't be a delusional fuck, you fuck. Let it go. Contract the ego. See where you are. You've done an amazing thing with the podcast, with your comedy, with all this stuff. Just be grateful that you landed on your feet and that you're still contributing creatively to the world. In conversation, both as a stand-up and as a podcaster as an actor. And I'm like, all right, well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for saying that. But it is still, you know, I am, you know, I do see myself, I don't know if you guys picked up on this. I'm a little self-centered. And I think that a lot of what's going on in my mind with everything in the world has something to do with me somehow, but it doesn't. And you got to really fucking know that. So now, like, I've kind of shifted. I'm sort of like excising the delusions and the fantasies to be more practical about entering this phase of my life. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I'm okay. But I'm not feeling sorry for myself again. I'm very grateful for everything that's happened for all you people. But, you know, there's just that part of you that's sort of living in another world. And sometimes that world is exactly the one you want to live in. And sometimes it's almost that. And that's where you run into trouble, right? It's the, I'm almost, no, dude, you're there, right? It's like, you know, when you say things like, oh, I just got to figure this out. Figure what out? It's happening now. This is it, man. This is it. You're looking down the barrel at the last few. And, you know, what are you going to do with that? You know? Yeah, don't pull the trigger. Try to find, is there a way to enjoy myself? Not according to my brain. Not according to my brain. Anytime I have a few moments of relaxed self-contentment and peace, my brain just sort of like, well, what about this, you idiot? Why'd you do that? How's that? You know, what's wrong with you? So my imagination, untethered, as I've said before, is not working in my favor. Maybe I can shift that. Anyways, stay in the present. Is that the point? Can you dig it? So look, Mark Ruffalo is here, and I didn't know what to expect, but we had a great time. He bounded up to my front door, and he's like, you're a wild man. And I'm like, what does that even mean? You know, and he was just all juiced up, and he was excited, and that made me excited. He's in the movie Poor Things, as you know. He's nominated for Best Supporting Actor at the Academy Awards for that movie, and that's playing in theaters, and that's a wild movie. But this is a great time. Here is me talking to Mark Ruffalo.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
I have a little tiny office, and it's just literally just, there's nowhere to set anything
anymore. Yeah, yeah, but it feels nice, right?
Oh my God, it's my stuff.
Where is it?
It's in New York.
In the city?
Yeah.
So you go in and it's all of it.
Yeah.
From your whole life.
It's little pieces from my whole life.
Have you had that moment where you're like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah, like I can't, well, it's like, you sort of pick something up and you're like,
yeah.
Should I, you know, maybe I need to clean up a little bit. And then you're like, I can't throw that away.
I know.
Like that's my kids, like, you know, yeah, second grade.
Sure.
Yeah. Art project.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing is, like, I'm a little older than you, but you get this moment where you're like, does this mean anything anymore? You know, where like there's just stuff I have where, yeah, it's a memory, but I don't know. Not loaded anymore.
No, I know. But those are like yearly. It's like one thing a year.
I know, but I never get rid of it. There's an attic in this structure with stuff up there. I think I still have boxes of tax papers from 1995.
Remember when we used to save that? You probably have your Thomas guide in there too.
There's a Thomas guide up there. Sure. Yeah. There's a lot of different recording devices.
The mini disc?
Sure, mini disc. That was late. I've probably got those Walkmen, you know, those handheld cassette players.
I have those too.
I got a box of cassettes.
I still do.
My sets, yeah.
That's amazing.
Of music?
Music. Yeah. Music. And I have an old boombox. And when I'm in my little studio, I listen to that. I love that. I love the hiss.
It's like time travel.
I love it. It's comforting to me now, man. Digital's like has an intensity to it.
Too
like,
clean.
It's very, it just doesn't have that kind of soft warmth.
Yeah. Do you have, are you a record guy now?
A bit, yeah. But it's.
I've got like 2,000 in there.
You do?
In my house. You know, you start and, you know, I've got that personality.
You can't get rid of those, man.
No, and you can't. Well, the thing that was brought to my attention, I didn't realize, it's like the reason why records were bad is when you had to move. I mean, that's a whole truck of records.
A whole truck.
And they weigh hundreds of pounds.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, one crate is like.
Oh, it's crazy.
Buddy, I know you didn't move yourself.
No, I don't know what I'm going to do with all that shit because I'm going to move eventually.
Wait, again, you're going to have to get a bigger plane.
No. No, I got to get smaller. You can't take it with you, Mark.
No, you can't. That's why you have it here.
Mm-hmm. So you came up, you said, as a wild man? Why do you think that?
I just heard I hear your podcast, and I just love, you know, you don't fuck around, you know, you're like right in the soup.
I know.
Hard in the paint.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was in a hotel room the other night doing a show, I don't know, San Diego somewhere, and that movie with Jennifer Garner came on. What is it, 13 or what, the one you
13
were
13 going on 30.
Yeah. And, you know, I because I knew I was going to interview him, I'm like, oh my God, he's been doing this a long time.
A long time.
And she was with you at your star thing? Yeah. Because I saw a picture.
Yeah, man.
So you guys are still friends?
Yeah.
That hardly ever happens.
Hardly ever.
I know, but she's so nice, right?
She's the best.
Really?
Yeah. I've been really lucky. I've had some really quality people come through my life and hang out, you know, not hit and run too much.
But there's a lot of hit and run. Like, I always assume that actors, like, after, and I've done some acting, and I know it's not true, that, you know, after the show's done, it's like, all right, maybe we'll see each other again in a decade.
At an award ceremony.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
Or at home watching it on TV going, fuck!
That fucker. Not again.
Yeah. How many does he need?
Yeah.
Spread it around.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, this year, though, I mean, and I'm, you know, I'm not flattering you. I think this is, it's your year, buddy.
You got to
think about that, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's hard not to. You're just a person.
Yeah. You don't get a lot of chances. I mean, you know.
I know.
I mean, I'm lucky I got the chances I have.
You have. You've got some good nominations. But this one, you know, I watched that movie and I saw it in the theater. And that character is so good.
Oh, man.
It's so good, dude.
What a character.
I mean, because it's hilarious but pathetic. And the charm is so, like, paper thin. It's how do you put that together?
Oh, man.
Did you work with Yorgos? I've talked to him. He's an interesting guy. Did he have ideas? Or is he just one of those guys?
He doesn't like to... we never talked about the character.
Never?
Never.
Read it and you're like, I know this guy.
Well, it took me a while, you know, and to be totally honest with you, I rely a lot on my dreams to kind of like...
Come on, really?
Yeah, to kind of like give me ideas.
So you remember them long enough? You write them down?
Yeah, I write them down.
So what was delivered to you?
There was this very kind of macho, his name was Ricardo Mountain.
Yeah. In your dream?
Yeah.
He had a name?
Yeah. And he was this very suave, I mean, Ricardo Mountain says it all.
Sure.
You know? And, you know, he was, he was just this very suave. He was like a porn. He was like a porn director.
Right. Yeah. Of course, with that name. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you know, these things just they you kind of get another input that's outside of your conscious.
Yeah.
Mind,
yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. And you wrote. You just rolled with it.
Yeah, I'm like, and then it's daydreaming. It's a script, you know, that script. I mean, you know,
it's crazy.
You know, at the risk of sounding immodest, you've just been thrice fucked by the very best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, who says that? That's a certain kind of person.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? Who can say that? I mean, we might have thought it.
Yeah, yeah.
But who's been able to do it three times?
Yeah, exactly. And then believe in himself in that way.
Yeah,
but that was the beautiful thing about it. There's this like fundamental weird insecurity about it that just kind of
the most insecure person in the world. He's like all these guys walking around, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're all puffed up, man. Yep. A little pin, and they're You know, they just deflate.
And there were so many deflations in that movie.
So many.
Just over and over again.
I know.
Like the dance scene. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God, man.
As an actor guy who's, you know, you've done enough stage and stuff, I mean, that must have been just spectacular. How many, like, to find the comedy in that sort of panic of embarrassment and then having to match
her and try to dominate her and then try to catch up to her and at the end says, you and I are both creatures of freedom.
Yeah.
And he's just totally
panicked.
Totally free.
Yeah,
totally over his head.
But you knew, like, I know it's a weird question about that, but you knew it was. I mean, that character is a comedic character.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you don't like, and I ask this all the time, and because I don't know, really, I have a hard time just getting out of myself. But you know, at some point, you're playing comedic beats, right? You know that this has to be funny.
Yes. Yeah.
You're not playing totally straight.
No. You can't. But I, you know, my like North Star of acting is one foot on a banana peel and the other in the grave.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that's when it's just humming.
Yeah. You know?
I think that's when it's just so.
But you've
exciting.
Done some pretty serious shit.
Yeah. I don't get much banana peel.
maybe just a little banana peel.
I don't get
peel?
Enough banana peel. I try to find banana peel wherever it's possible, you know?
But do you, like, I mean, because I, like, there's not a ton of comedies. You never did any real broad comedies, did you?
No, not really.
Yeah.
But there's been things along the way that have been, you know, like 13 going on 30.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, it's cute. But there's Infinitely Polar Bear, where I'm playing a bipolar character who's raising his two, you know, mixed race daughters in the 70s by himself.
Oh my God, what's that movie? I got to see that movie.
Infinitely Polar Bear.
When did you do that?
It's one of my favorite things. That was maybe
a long time ago.
6 years ago. Now.
Who directed it?
Maya Forbes.
Yeah,
it was Wally Walidarsky and Maya Forbes wrote it. They're comedy writers.
Yeah.
But it was her life story, and it is hilarious and funny and moving and sad at places.
Well, bipolar's, you know, it's funny half the time. Good times half the time.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's just like fleeting weeks of exciting.
I know all about it.
You do?
Yeah.
From doing that movie or from your life?
Just from my life, yeah.
You got the bipolar in your life?
I have some, bipolar and bipolar 2.
In the family?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and you dodged it?
Not exactly. I've got the watered down version.
Yeah,
I don't get the ups, just the lows, you know?
I'm actually the same way. You know, when you live with a sort of mild depression long enough, you just negotiate with it.
What else can you do? You manage it.
Yeah. You're sort of like, well, this isn't real, but it feels bad.
It still seems real.
Yeah. But like, I used to get these little manias that lasted 2 days. And I'd be like, is this going to stick?
No, you didn't get that.
It doesn't stick. And then you just drink a lot of coffee and try to get it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know.
It's like you just never are on solid ground.
Who was bipolar?
Oh, man.
It doesn't matter.
It's a long list of people. I don't want to out anybody. Yeah.
It just travels through the lineage.
I think it's, you know, looking back, before it was even a thing, really, before people even knew what they were talking about, I see the footprints of it going back.
Well, that's the weird thing is you do, like, because, you know, my old man's got the depression problem, but, like, his mother, who I knew briefly, my grandmother, was just always worried all the time and panicky and miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I know all about it, man.
Yeah. And you're like, that was what it was.
And you're now like, oh, that's
right.
What that was.
Right.
You know, I just thought she was just really cranky all the time or just so depressed. I mean,
panicked.
She would cry at the most happy experiences. She'd burst into tears. I'm like, why are you crying? She's like, I'm so happy.
And then you can at least track it, you know?
Well, I'm like, well, I know. She was the only one that I knew that was alive.
Your grandma?
And it is a family disease, you know? Like all those diseases.
It is.
The double diagnosis.
Well, yeah, and addiction, all that shit.
Dude, it's all hand in hand.
Like, I, you know, I've been on and off nicotine for years, and I can't, like, And now, like, I was off. I don't smoke anymore, obviously.
You chewed a gum?
Well, I chewed the gum. I was on the lozenges.
Downey.
Yeah, does he? He's a gum guy.
Oh, God.
All the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, he chain chews gum.
So when he's, like, you know, when he's not on set, it's just stuck there somewhere, and he puts it in his pocket.
Yeah, yeah. He has a little package, and he puts it back in there, and he cracks the next blister pack.
I know, I know what that's about, man. I just got introduced to those non-tobacco nicotine pouches.
What is that? Like you put it in your mouth?
It's like a pouch. It's like a little pouch.
Yeah, little. It's like a little
pouch. Yeah, but it's like a dip, but it's no tobacco.
Yeah.
It's just this white powder. I think it's just shards of glass that poke into your gum and deliver nicotine.
Oh, the little needles.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. And yesterday I bought 6 milligrams for the first time, and I was nervous.
I mean, 6 mg.
Yeah, 6 mg, man. I put it in, and I was like, start to sweat, and you're like, oh, here it comes.
Did you feel a little nauseous?
Of course.
Yeah.
But that's part of the experience. Oh, you just got to ride it out.
Yeah.
Wait for the hum.
And then after that, you're like, oh, I can't wait to get that again.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait a few hours. But at least I'll have something to look forward to.
To really make it last.
Fucking nightmare.
I know.
But like you get to a certain age where you're like, you know what? Some of these things aren't gonna change. You can't have you hit that wall where you're like, there's things about myself that aren't great, but
are you joking? I've hit so many walls.
Really?
I mean, you know, 56 now.
Everything's
changed. You know, it's all falling apart faster than you could put it back together now.
I know. I broke my foot, and I'm like, is this the beginning?
I know.
Right? What's going to break
now? Do you sleep through the night?
What do you mean? Do I pee all night?
Yeah. I can't get back to sleep. It's like 2 hours.
I try to. Like, yeah, I do the peeing. Couple times.
Oh, yeah.
Two, three.
That's fun.
Two or three times.
That's fun.
Yeah.
About airplanes? I mean, how fun is that?
In what way?
You just have to get up when everyone's you can't get up anymore.
Yeah, and or when you don't pee in the airport and you're on the plane.
That's exactly what I'm saying. When you're waiting to take off and they're like, please stay seated.
You're the guy that's like, you know, gets up before the seatbelt signs up and they have to warn you. Like, it's still on. I'm like, I know.
I know. We really don't want you to do it, but we can't stop.
You're going to roll the dice. It's not going to go down while I'm pissing. So you've got a lot of these little things that kind of you live with.
Yeah, I mean.
But you never did the booze or anything.
No, that's no, good. But I, you know, I'm the friend of the friend of Bill W.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm in the other program.
I've done that. I've done that program.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been
It's a good program.
It's probably the best one.
It's the emotional sobriety part.
Yeah, where, you know, the detach with love thing.
Yeah, man.
Rough.
Rough.
It's so
it
rough.
Goes against everything we think about love.
I know, but the detaching with love, it's really hard to remove the fuck you out of it.
I know it is, man. At what point does it flip over to fuck off?
Yeah,
but
then you're back in the game.
I swear it's detaching with love.
Yeah, yeah.
I swear, HP, it's detaching with love. Right, yeah. And HP's like, is it?
Is it? You seem to be seething.
Yeah, yes. You seem to be pretty thrilled about it.
Yeah, it's hard, man.
It's hard. It's
really I do a bit on stage where, like, I was in one relationship where, you know, what's interesting about that program that I didn't realize about, like, look, if you're a codependent, it's just, you know, wired for that, right? But someone once said that program, I talk about program all the time, but that Al-Anon is for people who want to stay. And, you know, I mean, if it's family, you don't have a choice. If it's spouse, you do have a choice. But it's not essentially, you know, treating just codependency. It's like, how do you live with the fuck that, you know, is... But that's what it's about.
The whole thing is about staying.
I know. And it's like that part of it, like, I went to a men's meeting when I was breaking up with some woman, and I say, I had no choice. I had to go because I would have engaged. It would have been a disaster. So I say, I went to this men's meeting. It was just 200 alpha doormats in the room.
I've been there.
Oh, yeah. Just these big guys like, dude, you got to detach. You're like, wow. Finding the heart.
You.
Yeah.
You. Wow.
You're telling me.
This is those rooms are...
heavy. It's heavy.
And it's beautiful. I mean...
It totally is.
And it's hilarious.
Totally.
A lot of the time.
Oh, God.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, I never laugh so hard as hearing someone else telling your story, but backwards.
Yeah, it's the best.
And so much more hardcore.
Well, there's something about narrative, like, because I found it must be helpful, too, in acting, too. Like, if you do those meetings enough, you engage with a story where you know that it's going to come out the end with some recovery,
yeah.
But it's a harrowing story.
Yes.
And there's beats to it. Like anytime like you check into those rooms, you know that you're going to be carried through this narrative that's going to be partially your story, but you also know if they're in there, the ending's going to be at least that happy.
Yeah.
That they're in there.
And it's pretty sad.
Totally.
A lot of times.
Oh, my God.
It's so heavy.
It's so heavy.
It's so heavy.
But do you draw from stuff like that? Do you draw from people? And like, I mean, I don't know. Because I don't know how much of acting is sort of like an emotional vocabulary of not mimicking, but a type of empathy that enables you to kind of wear it.
I think it's all compassion and empathy. I mean, for me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even when you're playing a guy like, I mean, I think what you respond to in Duncan, like Duncan can be played just straight across the board, pretty much that way. Like
the guy in Poor Things?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And to drop down into that, really drop down into his sort of insecurity, and he becomes empathetic.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah. There's a couple
this
of things.
Horrible narcissist.
Well, that's why it's hilarious, because you do feel empathy for him.
Yeah.
Wow. I just realized the bipolar must have helped with the Hulk a little bit,
buddy. These doublings keep showing up in my life all the time. I mean, I'm always playing these like dual people that have one side and then another side, and the Hulk is like the just the absolute clear manifestation of that.
Yeah, yeah. And you approach that with humanness.
Yeah, you try. I mean, that's what we hold on to in films, you know? I mean, you only can do a bit for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, bits are fun and just pure comedy.
Sure.
It works really well, you know? But I'm always looking for that a little bit deeper cut.
Have you hosted SNL?
No.
Why not?
I'm scared.
They've offered it to you?
Yeah. Oh. I'll never be asked back.
No?
Well, I don't think Lauren Michaels likes when you say no.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess not. But no, what... So what about that? I mean, you've done theater.
Just scared the living shit. I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. It was...
It's not the live thing, is it?
I think it was... It's a live thing, like reading off a cue card.
That's hard.
It scares me.
Yeah.
I'm dyslexic. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You don't lie on this show.
Like, yeah.
So I'm really dyslexic.
Like how dyslexic?
Like... I'll lose where I'm at on
a
page,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm just, when I hear about how that show works and they're changing things at the last second. And,
oh, yeah. So
and I want to be good on it, man.
Right.
I've been watching that my whole life. And like, I don't want to be the guy who's the host who sucks on Saturday Night Live, you know?
No.
Like, I owe Lorne Michaels more than that, you know? Like,
well, are you one of those people that you could memorize the shit? Like pretty much quick?
No, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Like I have the double whammy. Like I'm dyslexic and I have a hard time memorizing stuff. Like I have to start so early.
With any script?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But that's not part of the dyslexia. That's just you. Right?
It's just me. That's one of those things that you're talking about.
You can't do anything about the memory.
No, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Ginkgo, you know, now it's wasabi. Yeah. I chase all the memory shit.
You tried?
You know? I try everything.
Yeah.
I've tried everything across the board.
But so what happens? But you, how do you read, how many times do you read the script?
Well, you know, the most important reading's like that first one.
It is.
And just like immerse. See, the way I read
is
I literally, for a 1 hour, you know, 60-page script, 90-page script, it takes me like 4 hours to read it.
Right, okay. Well, so that's interesting because your dyslexia enables you a type of concentration that other people don't have.
Yes, and I fall in. I have to envision every single scene. Like I have to like see it.
Yeah, yeah.
To understand where I'm at. You know?
Right.
So it takes me longer than the movie. If you were sat down and watched the movie to read it. So it's a blessing, you know, it's like all these things are blessings and they're curses.
Well, that's wild because so that means in order just to process the words. You know, you've got to attach the feelings, and it takes, you know, it's like a full immersive experience.
Totally. I'm living in it. If I'm reading a book, I can't, like, read a script at the same time. Otherwise, I start mixing up the worlds, you know?
I and you have to see yourself in everything, I guess.
Kind of. I mean, I that first read is so essential because it's the first time it's coming to you so fresh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you can, and you end up like playing that first read. I mean, in a lot of ways, all the information, all of the spontaneity of that first read, all of your like the imagination kicking off, all these connections, that ends up being the most informative read of the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then would you just kind of then go scene to scene and lock in?
Yeah, yeah.
Once you do the read, you got it in your head?
Yes, then I'll go back and I'll do scene to scene. Sometimes, you want to know where you came from and where you're going in a scene.
Dude, that is the hardest thing about shooting.
Yes.
It's like, all right, so this is 9 days before you were bleeding.
Yes.
And you're like...
and then you ran away from the explosion and you run into this room and, it's just, you really have to keep a hand
I think that's
that.
The only reason you need a director or a script supervisor is because you're like, what happened?
Where are we? where was this? Okay, wait. Right. Okay.
Oh my God. Yeah, but do you ever watch yourself and go like, I didn't know.
All the time. I can't. I mean, literally, I'm watching myself, and I'm just sinking down in a chair.
But no one knows but you.
I hope so.
Where'd you grow up?
Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Do you go back there?
I do. My dad lives there. My sister lives there.
Your dad lives there now?
Yeah.
Oh my God, Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have no sense of that. I know Madison. Kenosha, I know Milwaukee.
It was a. It's a little bit like Milwaukee, except it was a factory town.
Right.
It was the hub of all manufacturing in the United States around the turn of the century.
So there's a lot of
immigrants. All the immigrants went there.
Is that where the Italian comes from?
Yeah, the Italian. It was a huge Calabrian, Sicilian community there. Polish. Irish.
Have you done that tracking? Have you tracked it back?
Yeah, yeah, because I'm getting my Italian citizenship because the shit's about to hit the fan.
I applied for Canadian permanent residency.
Yeah.
So you can get your Italian?
Yeah, yeah.
God damn it. I talked about it on the show the other day because there are these countries where if one of your grandparents was born there, I can go to Poland, but I don't think that's much better.
I don't know, man. Poland might be better now.
Maybe. I was told I could get that, but are they letting Jews into Poland?
Back in?
Yeah. But I think the idea is to get the European passport, right? The EU.
Yeah, yeah. That's the idea.
Oh, so you're preparing.
So you could go to Greece. I mean, you could...
I might go a lot of places if I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can also go, they have these golden passports.
Yeah, I know. But I'm weird, like everyone was like talking about Portugal and shit. I'm like, the fuck am I going to do in Portugal?
Exactly.
Just going to sit at a cafe and be like, oh, that's where the expats hang out.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I don't know the language.
Yeah. You'd be with the expats. So yeah. You wouldn't have to.
I don't. It's all very terrying to me.
It is, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, but, it's not unprecedented. That's the fucking problem.
No, it's not.
And it's like, just because we live here, you're thinking like, well, it's America. It's going to be tough. I mean, it's a big country. It's a republic.
Institutions.
Well, institutions, but also it's like, how are they going to do it in every state?
Yeah.
But,
we can't do anything in every state.
Exactly.
So how that.
Yeah. That's a silver lining.
Yeah.
Maybe just the Midwest will be fascist.
Yes.
And then everybody.
And Texas.
And Texas. Well, I don't know what's going on there. It's definitely fascist, but it's also a haven for libertarian rich guys.
Yeah.
Who just, somehow detach from the fascism.
Yeah.
Because if you have money, you can afford to rise above it.
You don't become a fascist. No.
No. You
elite your way through it.
That's right. I do a joke on stage now where I say, most of you, you'll adapt to fascism. I mean, it's going to be scary the first couple of weeks, but eventually you'd be like, oh, it doesn't affect the Wi-Fi, and I can still get all the streamers.
That's so fucked up. Oh, my God.
But you know it's true.
Well, now I do, because you said it.
Because what is
it? I don't want to hear that.
What is everyone going to do?
No, you're right.
They're just going to
adapt.
Yeah, of
course.
Like
everybody did, except for the people who are on the bottom side of that.
Yeah, the people that weren't allowed to adapt because they were being killed or pushed out.
Yeah.
And then,
that's the part that really...
And then you just like, how well do you know your neighbors? Oh, they're taking Mark away.
I know.
Is he just going to leave that stuff in the yard?
That scares me, man.
Well, it should. Of course it's scary. But
is that possible is the question.
Well, I don't know. I think the big mystery is, How organized are the ones that are just hanging out in the woods shooting guns and praying? How organized are they? I mean, that's the big question.
That is a big question.
It's like, if the screw turns, are they coming down from the hills or what? We don't know.
If you live in those hills.
Well, you, do you?
I do.
So when you're waving at people in the trucks, yeah, when you go into town, you're like, I don't know about that guy.
Sometimes. I know a lot of people, and there's a lot of really decent people. It's, you know, it's funny because yeah. There's a lot of really decent people who sort of have been indoctrinated into some
I know.
Of this
it's,
stuff.
It's like it's really about I don't think we had any idea just how soft people's brains are.
I heard you say that. Yeah.
Oh, I've said it before. I know. Well, I keep thinking about it.
It's what are they getting fed, really?
And how much?
Yeah. Do they know anything?
This thing is like powerful.
Buddy, that thing is.
It blasts your brain out.
Yes, it does. And it really, I think it really does change the way you think.
Reconfigures your mind.
I really think it does.
Because oddly.
Because I become so dumb.
You have?
Well, I just find myself, you know, having a harder time focusing, you know, reading really long things.
But that sounds like you had to do that whole
anyway.
Life.
Anyway, that's what my wife says. It. She's like, you're not getting Alzheimer's. You've been like this the whole time. I don't know what you're talking about. But I forget my phone. I forget my what are you talking about? You've been doing that for years. Yeah, ever since I met you.
And that's an old thing, too.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I'm like, I'm getting old. She's like, no, you've been old all the time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
You're just you were an old soul, a born
no,
old
I
man.
I like that. That's a good. That's
so
a good
Kenosha. So so you're okay.
Okay.
So, but like we grew up, none of this stuff was there, and that's why you find comfort in the cassettes. And there's something about that time that isn't filled with all this shit. You know that like and we've completely lost access to it because even if you try to just sort of like I'm just going to have a day like I had when I was in high school, it's menacing. Because you're like, what's happening?
Exactly.
What am I missing?
You're like, keep reaching for the phone.
Constant FOMO, constant fear of missing out.
Yes, I know.
You want to get that one
24-hour like news. I'm literally on the news all day long.
You have to compartmentalize that stuff.
Tell me about it.
I mean, because a lot of it's just speculation.
That's true.
It's not news. See, that's how they get you.
Yeah.
It's like
I'm waiting to find out too.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have some ideas.
Here are some ideas. Here's what we need to do.
I don't need your ideas. You know,
no.
I can't. It's
too many ideas.
It's the fucking worst. But what was the childhood like? Was it all right?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, you know, it was. We lived on the edge of a forest, so I got to spend my days in there.
Oh.
And that was, you know, and we would just leave the house.
Yeah.
And we would get on our bikes.
Sure, kids could just run wild.
Yeah, we just ran wild.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we got into a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Burned some stuff down, you know.
That's just a normal American childhood in the 70s.
Yes. Got busted for, you know, pinching candy at the penny store, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you didn't.
But was
you
that
know,
a busted thing, or did they just walk you home
had
to
my
your
bike
parents?
Stole. Stolen,
oh, yeah. Boy, real
the
criminal.
Neighborhood kids.
And you knew the kid? That's the
no,
worst
I
thing.
No, I didn't
about
know the kid. The kid's like, a group of kids, you know, just comes upon me. Can I, hey, man, cool bike. Can I ride it? And I was
and
like,
just took
yeah,
it?
Sure.
Yeah.
And he just took it. And I was like, is he coming back? And they're like, that's his bike.
Oh, no. But you're able to use that feeling, that experience.
All the time.
You can draw from that.
I draw from that.
Do you?
How do you think I got to Hulk? I was pissed. I lost my innocence.
Yeah, every time you're about to go into Hulk, you just see those kids riding away with your bike.
I do. My little Schwinn banana seat, the scrambler.
Yeah. Oh, nice. A Schwinn scrambler.
That's right.
And you had sibs, right? You had a bunch of whole big family?
A brother, two sisters.
Oh, wow. So that's big.
Yeah.
And what'd your folks do?
My dad was worked for a construction painting company that my family started.
They were
house painters.
Really?
And my grandfather.
The Ruffalo and Sons?
It was just a Ruffalo painting.
Oh.
And
did they have a store? Or just
it was just a big office. They had a lot of trucks and a lot of, well, when they started, it was just my grandfather and his cousin and a few ladders and a truck.
And it said Ruffalo on the truck?
Yeah.
That's exciting
Ruffalo
when
painting.
You're a kid, right?
Yeah.
This is my grandpa.
Oh, yeah. We'd drive by and it'd be like, Ruffalo.
Yeah, that's us.
Yeah, that's us.
My grandfather had a hardware store in Haskell, New Jersey called Jack's Appliances and then Jack's Hardware. And it was like, you drive by like, my grandpa.
And everyone knows Jack.
Sure. Oh, boy, they definitely
they
do.
All all knew him.
They knew your dad?
Oh, everyone knew them.
Yeah. It's great.
It was great. It was a great way to grow
up. And there was a was there an Italian community that
huge.
You got, and that's what you lived in?
Yeah, yeah. And there's like this amazing, even when I go back there, we always go to this place, Tenuta's, which is like the I mean, it's the best Italian deli in the United States in the middle of Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They get all the best Italian stuff there.
Yeah. Can you get guanciale there?
Yeah, of course you can. Giardinera, I mean, the CC beans,
Yeah.
Like just all the obscure Italian, you know, and then they have an Italian bakery, and then there's another Italian bakery.
And it's all still going?
Yeah, man.
That's great.
It's great.
Because a lot of those places, like when a certain generations pass, they can't hold out.
No, that's not happening there.
And so there's still a big Italian community?
Yeah, and they go to that place.
Oh, that's great. Those restaurants, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you spent the whole childhood there?
No, when I was 13, I moved to Virginia Beach.
How that? Why?
My dad went to work on a job there.
Yeah.
And got sort of, you know, my dad would go on these jobs a long time, and he'd be gone for like a
just
month.
Just painting
or two.
Jobs?
Yeah, like they were doing Trident submarines. They were doing like
they painted submarines.
Yes. They painted the Trident submarines. They painted the Navy bases. They would paint.
That's a big operation.
Oh, huge. I'm talking huge.
I mean, that's like, you know, that's like a military contract.
Yes, huge. With all of the security clearances and all that stuff.
Oh, so this is not some sort of like, you know, like work.
No, this isn't like the local, we're going to do.
But that's how it started, though.
Yeah, that's how it started. And then he worked and moved his way into Chicago, which was not easy, you know.
Commuting?
Yeah, yeah. And they'd go to do work in Chicago. It was it's 45 minutes north of Chicago.
Yeah.
And then they were in Milwaukee, and then they started doing, you know, all the, you know, American Motors was there, so they did American Motors, they did Abbott, you know, Laboratories.
Yeah, yeah. They painted it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sandblasted, painted it. Then they were doing all the bridge work and the lead abatement and all that stuff.
You watched the transition from just sort of like, you know, humble working class to massive.
To upper middle class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
we lost it all.
Okay.
That's part of the reason I left when I was when we left when I was 13.
I know that father.
Oh, man. and then he became
was
an entrepreneur, and that's always, you know,
that's
like
where it goes.
Gambling. I mean, in a way, it's
depending on who the guy is, you know, you got something you know how to do, and you make money at it.
Yes.
And then people that only care about making money, they're like, we'll take that guy's money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like, you know,
not a sucker.
He was, no. But he did, you know, he got us through.
Yeah.
But we were moving, you know, from 13 to I left home.
And they stayed
18.
Together?
Yeah. Well, until I was in my 20s. Like, after all of the, everything
the
went to
went?
Shit.
Oh.
You know, then and they sort of lived through that.
Yeah.
Then they
were done.
The yeah.
Yeah. My parents didn't quit until I was in my 30s.
That's amazing. Yeah. So they were what? They were at least married for 30 years.
Oh,
or
yeah,
30,
sure,
or 19.
35. Like they were they were married a long time, but you know there were other problems. But it's weird when they get divorced and you're a grown person.
I know,
because you know
you're like, are you kidding?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like half over now. You might as well just.
Well, there's that, but there's also, was my whole life a lie?
Well, that's the one that really kills you.
Yeah, if you go,
because I didn't know. I had no idea my
what he
parents,
was up to.
I had no idea my parents. Yeah, I had none. I had no idea. I had no idea. I had no idea they had any problems.
Sure.
They were like affectionate and they were sweet. They never fought in front of us.
Oh.
And so when it was like, hey, we're getting a divorce.
Yeah.
And here's why. And you're just like, what? So my whole life is like.
Yeah.
A sham? I mean, I don't want to use the word sham, but it's like, but it's a fucking sham, you know?
But they did the right thing.
They did.
I mean, that's...
Oh, they were beautiful.
But that's the thing, like, as a parent now, I'm not a parent.
Yeah, I am.
Right. So you know, like, you know, you make decisions.
Yes.
The kids will see this.
Yes.
And then we'll go in the room and do the other thing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, but still, like...
But it's still pretty... it's a punch in the gut. I mean...
Wait, because you don't know them. That's it. Like,
exactly.
As a grown person, you don't, like, you're like, what kind of people are these?
And then when you're like, what kind of relationship can I have? I mean, I don't understand.
How crippled am I?
Yeah, I mean...
How fucked up?
Am I that, like...
Yeah, yeah.
unaware.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's that. But then there's also the sort of like everything that's unsaid gets put into you anyways.
You don't miss it.
No, but you're wired.
Yes, you got it now.
Yeah, right. That's right. So then it's not just, you know, am I a sucker? But it's like, am I them?
I know. And then do I model? How do I do a relationship? I don't know. You know, they didn't show me really how to do it.
I know.
They didn't, you
Does
know,
anybody?
You got to fight in front of your kids a little bit.
Sure. So,
and then you got to teach, they learn how to fight. That's just natural.
Yeah.
What they don't know how to do is make up. And that's where a relationship is.
Yeah.
It's being able to make up. Because we all are fucked up. And
yeah,
we all
sure.
fight. And we all, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't know how to make up.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know how to, like.
Without carrying the resentment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you still carry it.
I know. You could collect them.
Yeah. But, like, you get compassion, hopefully.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
And empathy. It took me, like, I think a long time to connect and really understand empathy. Because I'm a self. When you're self-centered, empathy is fleeting. You know, you can do it. You can stay in it for 10 minutes, and then eventually you're going to be like, but how's that me? Is it?
What about me?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yes, we felt a lot for you.
Yeah, but now it's my turn, right?
Isn't it?
Yeah, and then they walk away, and you're like, fuck! Yeah, and there you are.
I just got rooked.
Oh, you got me. Conned again emotionally. So, Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
What happens there? Where do you start acting?
There. I was a surfer, I was a skater, I was in a punk band.
What'd you do in the punk band?
I played bass.
You still play bass?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
My daughter plays bass and guitar. So
did you have the guitar to give her? Your old guitar?
I gave her my bass.
You did?
Yeah, my P bass.
Oh, you got a P bass.
Yeah.
So
like
what was the name?
70s P bass.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
What's the name of the punk band?
It was, we were called Voice of Reason.
Oh, of course. Voice of Reason. And that's something that stuck with you.
VOR.
The well-known VOR in all the Virginia Beach fanzines.
Yes. Yeah, those little fan
yeah,
ranks.
Yeah, we're playing a basement.
We're playing a skate park. We're playing a skate ramp.
And you did it?
Yeah. We played parties. We played, you know.
Original songs?
Yeah.
Did you write them?
We wrote some original songs.
Yeah.
We did a lot of covers.
What were some of the names?
Like Agent Orange.
Sure. What were some of the names of the original songs?
Oh man. Well, Voice of Reason was we had the, you know,
close with
title.
That.
Yeah. We're the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Reason. All bar cards.
Yeah, of course. That's great.
Four notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No
fast,
bridge.
Fast drums.
Yeah, fast drums. Yeah. You know.
Were you popular?
We had a little following there.
How long did you do that?
Oh man. We were probably, that was about a year, and it came out of the drama department.
That's where you met the guys?
Yeah. And
at the high school?
Because I was a wrestler. I was like a really serious wrestler.
And so you were
I was a jock. I was this weird hybrid of like, I was in every single thing, you know?
Well, that's good. That means you can move through all the different worlds.
Well, that's what I learned.
You're diplomatic.
You know, we were moving
every year. Codependency will help you
there
do
you
that.
Go, buddy. Hypersensitive to other people's needs.
Sure. Just latch on.
Yeah. What do you need me to be?
An appendage.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I can do that.
What do you want to hear? What do you want me to be? You know? It's another blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
You know?
But so it wasn't a big departure to the punk thing? It wasn't like a rebellion thing? You were a jock, but you weren't an asshole jock. And wrestling's a different thing.
Yeah.
Wrestling's not football.
No, that's kind of punk rock. And that's as punk rock as you could be in the sports world.
Yeah.
Because you're really trying to hurt people. Like, you know.
One-on-one.
And it's just you.
Yeah.
And the more brutal you are, the more punk rock you are.
Were you good?
I was really good.
So when you did Foxcatcher, you're like, I got it.
Well, yeah. I the hard part about that was I was a righty.
Yeah.
So I was shooting on the right-hand side. Every move I did was on the right-hand side. Dave Schultz was left, so I had to it was almost harder because my natural instinct was to do this, and I had to switch it all up.
You must have been like, when you got that script, you're like, I got this. And then they pointed it out that he was left. You're like, fuck!
Oh. No, and then I was like, it was 6 months.
To learn it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. That movie is a great movie.
That's great.
It's crazy, dude.
It's crazy. I love doing that. It was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Really?
Well. Oh my God! And wrestling Channing, I had to wrestle Channing. They kept us apart after a while because I kept getting hurt. Because you know, I might come off as a pretty nice fellow, yeah. but like
when you get in the mode,
I want to win. And you know, Channing had 30 pounds on me.
He's huge.
He's huge, and he would just clop me. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but we, you know, that was we really went through something together there. Like I love that guy. He is my brother.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
You guys still hang?
Not
talk?
Really, but, yeah, but like we'll pick up right where we left off.
I could see it. That movie was like such a deeply disturbing true story, and the exploration of the human spirit on that one.
Huge.
I mean, I can't.
And all of its darkness and triumph, you know?
But that, like, you know, but being fundamentally codependent in that dynamic. Wow.
And you're dead.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate price of codependency.
That's the Unrecovery movie.
Yes. Not much recovery there.
But Carell, were you surprised by him?
Oh my God. He never broke character. I mean, I'd be in the elevator with him after 12 hours of just being just brutalized.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a really hard shoot. And I would look over at him and he was just in character.
Really?
On the elevator. And I'd be like, how's this going for you? And he's like, pretty well. I don't know.
So creepy.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
it's sort of astounding that, you know, that he can do that.
Because
he's so fucking funny.
He's a chameleon. He's like Peter Sellers.
I guess that's true.
In that way. You know, he's a total chameleon and so committed.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see the seams.
Yeah,
there,
right, right.
Know?
Yeah, yeah.
And even that character has a it's a strange character. What a strange
There is funny. Character. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. When his mother comes in.
Oh.
And
he's gonna wrestle,
and they gotta lose.
And they're trying to show him, and he's just so bad. It's undeniable how bad
so
he is.
It's so sad.
It's so sad, and she's just, oh.
Who was that again?
So disappointed. It was it just ran. Just, yeah. This is the thing.
Oh yeah,
Redgrave. Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, that's right, of course. Yeah.
The great, amazing Vanessa Redgrave. The unforgettable Vanessa Redgrave, who I just forgot.
No, it happened.
I came back. I got it.
You got it on your own.
It's like love, you know?
You got it on your own.
It's like love. If you chase it, it runs away.
Yeah.
But if you hold back a little bit, it comes to
We're talking about memories?
Yeah. That's what I've learned. If you try to chase it, forget it. It's gone.
And then if you don't go to your phone, sometimes you'll try to remember something.
I saw you. You were going to do it. And I'm like, no fucking way.
We're doing it.
No way. I'm stopped. I'm getting there before that computer does.
And you did it. Sometimes I'll go a whole day, and then at the end of the day, you'd be like, fuck, I got it. It's Redgrave. Yeah. Took me 12 hours.
It comes.
Yeah.
When you're not chasing it. Surprising. Like love. You're surprised by it.
Yeah. So, all right. So the punk band, and then, like, what was it that got the acting going?
I wanted to be an actor. Like, it was a little kid. My grandmother let me stay up one night. I told this before, but my grandmother, she used to let me stay up at night, and I'd sneak down after the other kids were and I'd sit there and watch TV with her.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'd smoke her Eve cigarettes, And she's like, come on down. There's a world premiere of a great movie tonight. And I came down. And I was like, she's like, A Streetcar Named Desire. And I was like, okay. And I came down. We're watching it. And I'm watching Brando. Like, I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Grandma? What? Who's that?
Yeah.
And she's like, Marlon Brando. I'm like, what is he doing? She's like, he's acting. I'm like, I want to do that.
That's a good
Where's
one.
Where's your fancy first star? I got a lawyer friend, and I'll take a look at these things.
Okay, for appraisal.
Yeah. The Napoleonic coat says, whatever belongs to the husband also belongs to the wife, and vice versa.
Did you ever do that play?
No, I wish. I'm too old now.
Oh.
You know, there's all these parts. This is one of the things. You get to be 56. All the parts that you're like sure you were going to play one day, you can't play anymore. Age out.
Did you use it for auditions or anything?
Never.
Because you can't do the impression.
Yeah, and it's like, how are you going to touch? I would never even Yeah. I mean, what could you add to his performance, Streetcar Named Desire? Like, how could you top that?
I can't even name another Stanley. I know there was a new one. Didn't someone just do it?
Yeah, they do it. They do it all the time. And I'm sure there's great ones. I mean, who am I to say? But I'm terrified of coming up against that and having a comparison made.
But didn't they compare you anyways? At some point?
Unbeknownst. I mean,
not because of that.
Yeah, not by my own
somebody
doing.
Somebody decides you were the new Brando at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot to people. Great. I mean, talk about setting you up for it's amazing I'm still here.
Yeah, yeah. That's a pretty big
setup. That was
pretty
heady thing, yeah.
But he was like, but did you, like, as you kind of moved through?
Oh, let me tell you what happened. So I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And I was a wrestler. I went down that road. Everyone's like, oh, what, you don't want to be an actor? Okay.
Yeah, wrestling's so much more of a stable.
Yeah, a man's thing. Yeah. So I'm walking by the drama room, and they're all rolling around on the ground and wrestling around, but it's two guys and, like, 20 girls.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing? I want to be in there.
That's a better sport.
And I don't have to cut 20 pounds, to do it.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, one of two straight guys.
In the whole program?
I was one of one straight guys, you know?
And that was in high school?
Yeah.
And so you started doing that
show. Yeah, so a kid broke his arm. I was like, oh, I'm in the drama department for an easy A, but I was really digging it.
Yeah.
And a kid broke his arm, and my teacher, Nancy Curtis, is like, hey, why don't you... will you replace him?
For what show?
It was called, it's a musical called Runaways, and it was about a runaway kids living in like a foster home.
So you're singing?
They're singing.
Yeah.
I'm the straight guy.
Yeah.
I'm playing a detective.
Oh, good.
And I'm just copying just flagrantly Columbo. Can I ask you a question?
You did the eyes too?
Yeah.
But you probably got laughs.
That was it. I got this huge laugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And I went to my acting teacher, Nancy, and I was like, Nancy, I know I know I'm 18 and, you know, is it too late
to do this?
And she's like, no, Mark, it's not too late.
Oh, is she still around?
Yeah.
And do you like?
Yeah, I'm in touch with her.
You give her credit all the way.
I just did.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
Her.
Right?
Yeah, I've had these incredible women in my life.
Yeah.
Who were all along the way were like really instrumental in where I'm at today.
So where do you go from Virginia Beach then?
So then we moved to San Diego. My senior year.
Your dad?
Yeah.
For military contract?
Yeah.
Huh.
For that? Yeah, he was going back to do that, and he was starting another company.
Painting?
My uncle was painting, so I think he went to help work on that. But he did this other thing called Soda Butler.
Yeah.
Which was the original make your own soda at home with a little CO2 thing.
Yeah.
And it was about to take off. And the big companies stopped selling him their syrup. Which is part of antitrust. Like they have to sell the public that syrup.
Coke,
Pepsi, you know.
Oh, that's why you get the weird syrups with SodaStreams.
Yeah. SodaStream was the beginning of it.
Yeah.
He basically started that. And then he had Beermeister, which was have your keg at home in your house in a little refrigerator with a tap. That was
his. That's your dad?
Yeah.
Setting himself up.
Genius. I mean, it was actually genius at the time. And
so you're in San Diego.
Yeah, so we're in San Diego. I'm 18, and all I'm doing is sitting in my room. I'm doing some surfing, smoking a lot of weed, and playing the bass, and like just going downhill. Like,
but there was more punks in San Diego, no?
Yeah, but I was so depressed. I didn't know anybody, and it was San Diego.
I know,
we're in Mission Beach. It's hardcore. It was hardcore, and it was a hardcore drug scene there.
Yeah.
I mean, and the people are—they're just edgy, you know. It's just hard to get into that scene. You know?
I never know what to make of it. It seems like a lot of people that are kind of like walking around in sandals.
Yeah,
but I know there's got to be an underbelly to it.
Oh yeah. Well, we're in Mission Beach. It was heavy. I don't know what it's like now, but it was very, very heavy.
So that's where you started to spiral.
Yeah, and we met somebody, and she's like, "You should go to the Stella Adler Conservatory in Los Angeles." And I went to my dad and was like, how would I do this? He's like, take the train. You know, you take a train.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what'll happen? What happened? What, you know, I was like, what's the worst that can happen? And I was like, the worst that can happen? I die? And he's like, big deal.
You won't know.
You won't even know it.
Yeah, yeah. So you just start once a week?
I'd go 3 days a week. And then my parents
and you went
were
back home every time?
My parents were broke at that time. And yeah, I'd go, I'd take the train.
Yeah.
I'd work bus as a bus boy. I'd make just enough money. It was like, I needed 40 bucks. It was 33 bucks for a round trip ticket. It was $7. It was $7 to eat. I'd get a burrito, those burritos on Hollywood Boulevard. I went to school on Hollywood Boulevard during the height of the crack years.
Yeah.
It was crime. It was mentally ill people. Yeah. It was bad. I mean, it makes the Hollywood today look like
right. It's a Disneyland. Mall now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
it is Disneyland. Now.
It is Disneyland, but it's you know, it's a little edgy Disneyland. Yeah,
it's a little dark.
And, yeah, so that's how I was living, and I was doing that for months before I actually moved to LA.
Was Stella still alive?
Yeah.
So you got to work with her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But my main teacher there is this woman, Joanne Linville, who is like this great television actor and like an amazing teacher. And I walked into the school and she's like, what are you here? What are you? I'm like, I know I'm 18. I know I'm probably over the hill. But I don't know anything really about acting, you know, but I want to be an actor. She's like, well, you've come to the right place, darling.
And
she took me under her wing and she really taught me everything. I mean, it was
And that's
amazing.
Pretty straight up method, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a version of it.
Right.
You know, it's much more your imagination. Like, they leaned hard on the imagination, less on your, like, own personal life.
Right.
But Joanne was an interesting hybrid because she studied both methods. She studied with Stella and she studied with Lee Strasberg. So she was melding the two together, which I think is kind of the pinnacle of those.
What was the primary difference?
Strasberg was more into using your personal life
for the emotional memory.
And then projecting that onto whatever you're doing or playing. Stella was like, no, the playwrights have these universal truths, and we have to lift ourselves up to that, and we do that through the imagination, not through our own lives, because our own lives are so limited. And this is the Stanislavski stuff.
Yeah,
but Stanislavski took those. At one point, Stanislavski's like, no, we can't just use ourselves. We gotta use our imagination. But he melded them together. But when they came to America, Stella and Lee Strasberg, who hated each other, sort of created this schism in his teachings. And they became these two, like, schools that to this day are in a sort of, I don't know, they don't like each other.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll do anything. It's not about, I don't give a shit what the technique is, I do.
But Brando studied with Stella, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, you know, did you realize that?
This is the crazy thing. Everyone was talking Brando. I didn't know who Brando was. I didn't remember. When my grandmother said Brando, I'm like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Everyone was talking Brando. And I didn't know. I was like, I don't know who Brando is. And then one day my friend comes over with a VHS and he throws in Streetcar Named Desire. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh my, how did I end up here?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And the whole memory came back. I mean, it's kind of like a suppressed memory.
Right. A good one.
Maybe it wasn't that suppressed. And so, yeah. And I was like, wow, I'm in the right place.
And that's where you did all the studying.
And I was there for 7 years. It was a 3-year program, and I hung out for 7 years. And yeah, man, I was just working on my craft.
Yeah. Getting out of San Diego.
I got out of San Diego and I lived in a closet. It was a walk-in closet, $200 a month.
Really?
Downtown near MacArthur Park, where it was, you know,
right.
Bodies
by
strewn
Wilshire?
Everywhere. Yeah. It was like crack.
Yeah.
You know, it was
dope.
Hell. It was hell. It was real hell. And
so you're here. You're doing it.
Yeah. And I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. And I'm living my dream.
You get an agent?
It took a long time to get an agent.
So you come down here when you're 18 and start. So when do you get an agent? How old?
Probably 20.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No, not bad.
And then you're going out on auditions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you got a job?
I got a Clearasil commercial really early on. And then I was like, that's it, I made it.
Yeah.
And then I didn't work again for like 4 years.
What were you doing for work?
Oh, man, I did everything. I did landscaping. I did house painting. I did computer line ribbon sales, telemarketing sales back in the day when there, you know, it was a dot matrix printer.
Sure. But painting, did you grow up painting?
I was around it all the time, you know. I knew how to do it.
You could hold a line?
Yeah. My dad's like, just, you got to put the paint on the brush. Don't be, come on. I'm like dipping it, you know, very daintily.
Yeah.
That was a big, once you learn to like
get the paint on the brush, you're good.
And cut in. That's the thing. Learn to cut in, you know. But I knew all the tricks because just watching it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much I knew. And then I did busboy, waiting. But where I really like just found myself was bartending. I bartended for 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, at all these places.
Yeah.
I used to bartend at the Chateau Marmont. Me and another guy put the first bar there. You know?
Really?
Yeah, they didn't have a bar.
Did you build it?
We'd set all these tables up for all the events there.
Yeah.
And then we would just be buried, you know, all night back there.
So now you're around real celebrities?
I'm with celebrities all the time. And they're the worst tippers.
Really?
They were like terrible. But I was doing all these little plays.
Yeah.
I'm probably personally responsible for just destroying so many forests uselessly because I'd hand out my flyer for a play and literally 5 minutes later it'd be crumpled up and I'm picking it up and throwing it away.
Where were you doing plays?
Oh, we had a little theater off of Hollywood Boulevard. You know those little theaters in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
We had one of those.
On Santa Monica Boulevard?
Yeah, yeah.
Down by, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
In a row.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, 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 a theater row.
Yeah.
And we were page 93. and someone just was like, we were fighting over what the name was going to be. Someone's just like, fuck it. They picked up a book. They opened it. It was like page 93. We're like, fuck it, fine.
That's
page
great.
93.
That's cool.
Great idea.
Yeah.
You know?
But that people still do that, dude.
Yeah, we were doing fine. We could do a play for $5,000. If you tried to do that in New York, it was like $100,000.
Yeah.
So we did 30 plays.
Wow.
We got to work it out, man.
That's a good experience.
Oh, it was amazing.
Audiences?
Audiences, yeah. I mean, 30 people.
But that's all right.
Yeah, it was whatever it
You're
took.
Doing the acting.
We were doing the acting in front of people.
Where were your
play
peers
the great parts.
These guys?
Well, Benicio del Toro was one of the people I started. Selma Hayek was
at
the school.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of
And
people.
They were in the plays with you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No. We were in school together.
Oh, okay.
But this is a group that all these people now, Tim McNeil, he was in Forrest Gump. He's written like 20 plays. He's a great playwright. Chris Thornton, who just was on Magnum PI, the new Magnum PI.
Yeah.
But they teach there now too.
And
my
Stella?
Son goes there at Stella. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's wild.
And I'm
man.
Still connected to the school.
How so?
I'm on the board, but I go back all the time. And I
do
sit
you do
in on classes. I talk to people.
I've done
substitute teaching there back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I love it. It's a great place. It's happening.
Yeah. And when did you get your break?
Oh man. So I was doing all this theater here, and if you were an actor doing theater in Los Angeles, and you told the casting director that, they would literally look down. It was a net negative.
Sure.
So I had a resume full of theater.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, where would you do this? So like Los Angeles. Oh.
Right.
And there goes my headshot in the garbage.
So you just went on auditions constantly?
Constantly. Wasn't getting anything.
The rejection didn't bother you?
Oh, what do you think? I'm not an animal. I'm not a machine. You know how many holes I had in the walls of my apartment from throwing, punching and throwing? Oh, man, it was heartbreaking. I think I quit acting like five times during the course of it all, you know?
What does that mean, though?
Where else am I going to go?
Yeah, you quit. No. After a certain point, you quit, and then when your agent calls, you're like, I'm back in.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it started. It was funny, because Kenny Lonergan, who did, that was the beginning of it, You Can Count on Me. But before that, it was a one-act play version of This Is Our Youth. This Is Our Youth is what launched me.
Yeah.
It was an off-Broadway play that just became the hottest thing in New York at the time. And all the LA casting directors went to see it, and they were like, where did you come from?
Yeah, I was in your office 2 weeks ago.
I was like, I've been under your nose for the last 13 years. You know, where have you fucking been?
Yeah.
But it allowed me to like really fly.
Lonergan's the best.
He's the best. Have you had him on?
Yeah.
Oh, he's the best.
He's great. Like,
how are you, Mark? I'm okay. It's really hard to get here today.
Smart guy, though, right?
Genius.
That's right.
And the best writer.
Oh, my God.
He is the best.
Well, you did what? Three movies? Three Lonergan? Two movies?
I did Margaret and You Can Count on Me. But then I did the play.
Yeah.
So.
Those are big movies. Those are, like, intense.
Oh, he's the best. Did you ever see the director's cut of Margaret? It's like 3 hours.
I think I did.
Oh. It's so good.
It's relentless, that movie.
It's relentless. But the writing is just, you can't even believe it.
I know. It's an interesting role for Allison Janney.
Wasn't that crazy?
Out.
First scene.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah. But it's a horrible scene.
But it was kind of horrible.
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 So that's where it starts rolling. Yeah. And then you just, like, because you look at all the, you've done a lot of movies.
I am. I'm trying to catch up to Willem Dafoe.
Oh, my God. That guy.
Guy works nonstop. He's like, you
make choices. There's some guys, I'm not saying he's one of them. I mean, he works a lot, but he does, you know, you can't do everything.
Yeah.
You turn down movies sometimes.
I do.
Yeah.
Like SNL.
Yeah.
I tried to turn down Poor Things.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, I said a year ago,
yeah.
I don't know if I'm the guy
yeah.
for this.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you're him. Yes, you are.
That's it?
Enough of that. Yeah. It's like, that's enough of that shit.
Yeah. But you worked with all these great directors.
It's been amazing. I have like the most amazing, like, quietest career.
Is it quiet? You're kind of, I've forgotten that Haynes directed that Dark Waters.
Isn't that crazy?
It's a heavy movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking great.
But that movie's changed. You know, that's when it's changed. They're, you know, the EPA is finally putting regulations on that. They've known about this for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And they've done nothing. And
yeah.
Now, finally.
It's happening?
Yeah. I was just in Congress like 2 weeks ago.
About that?
Yeah. I was at the EPA testifying with the families who lost people,
yeah.
you know, to cancers.
Yeah.
Young people.
Yeah.
You know, brain tumors, liver cancer.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And we're testifying in the EPA, and they have the legislation sitting on their desk. Biden said in his, you know, in his campaign that he was going to regulate EPA, and now it's happening. And it's because of that movie. Well, Rob Bellot's work, really.
Yeah.
But that movie brought it to the whole world.
That's good when something like that works.
Yeah, man.
And that happens, and that it raises awareness.
Yeah, and it's not political.
And it tells a human story.
Yeah, man.
It's not political.
No, that's how we get to each other, man. We tell stories about each other.
Yeah, and it landed.
Yeah.
But, like, what happened with, like, you're okay, your brain?
What do you think?
But, I mean, when did that brain tumor happen?
That was in 2001.
After what movie?
I was towards the last 2 weeks of The Last Castle with Robert Redford and James Gandolfini, my big break after You Can Count on Me.
Yeah.
I am about to go off and do Signs with M. Night Shyamalan, co-starring with Mel Gibson.
Right.
And I'm on that movie, and I have a dream that I have a brain tumor, but it's like no other dream I'd ever had. And I'm like, wake up sobbing. And it's not even a dream. It's just like knowledge.
Yeah.
It's just like, you have a brain tumor. You have to deal with it immediately.
Yeah. And that was the dream.
That's a dream. And I wake up and I go, I made friends with the onset doctor.
Yeah.
And I go to her and I said, you know, hey, doc.
Another actor with a brain tumor.
I know this sounds crazy. I think I had a dream last night. I had a brain tumor.
Yeah.
Do you think I could get it checked out? And she's like, that is crazy. But I'm on the board of the local hospital. I'll get you a CAT scan today.
Where were you?
I was in Nashville.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my wife was pregnant. She's about to give birth.
Yeah.
I go in there and they're like, yeah, you have a mass behind your left ear the size of a golf ball.
What?
And it's a brain tumor. And we don't know if it's benign or malignant.
Yeah.
We won't know until we could biopsy it. But, you know, you should probably talk to a surgeon.
Oh my God. So and, then you just, everything drops out.
Oh, dude.
I can't even imagine.
And then I got out of the surgery and my left side of my face was totally paralyzed.
So you get the surgery, but like you're sure you're dying in that moment.
I'm literally made a video for my son before I went into the surgery because I was also afraid of dying on the, you know,
yeah, on the
like,
table.
You know, like you have a 30% chance of dying on the table. You know, as you're going in, you're signing, it's okay if I die on the table.
Yeah, you know? He told me. Yeah, you're the odds.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so I made a video for him. I mean, that's how real it felt to me and how scary that
is. Do I have that video?
That knife is scary that you have on that knife.
I know. I found it.
It's so cool.
Oh, do you have that video? Have you watched it?
I haven't watched it. I have it in the two storage units that I have of all of our other stuff.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
That would be wild to watch.
I'll watch it. I'm going to go there this summer and clear that thing out.
Yeah.
You know, and get to all that old stuff.
So you get the surgery.
I didn't tell my wife I had this brain tumor till after the baby was born.
How'd she didn't know you went into surgery?
No, then I told her the day, like maybe 2 days after the baby was born, that I had to go to this neurosurgeon to see what we're going to do with it.
Oh, so it was before the surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you waited.
I waited.
But yeah, and you still didn't know if it was benign or malignant.
No. And when I went there, they're like, we think it's an acoustic neuroma, which is benign. So I was like, oh.
Yeah.
But I was still afraid, you know.
And so you get the surgery?
I got the surgery. I wake up and my face goes paralyzed.
All
like
of it?
Hours after. Total left side, completely paralyzed. I can't close my eye.
Oh, God.
And I'm talking like this.
No,
you know?
Come on.
And I'm about to go do a movie with Mel Gibson.
And they had to rewrite it?
No. You know, I said, I've never rewritten a script for an actor.
Yeah.
Not a word.
Yeah.
I was like,
Yeah. But he could have had a stroke.
I'm like, I could be. He was in an accident. The guy actually was in an accident.
Yeah.
I was like, he had a brain. He hit his head.
No.
No, you know, it was a doctor who pulled the plug. He's like, you can't. No. You can't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The doctor's like, you can't do it.
What were the odds they gave you that your face would come back?
They gave me a. Well, every single day it doesn't come back.
Yeah.
The odds go down. And after 3 months, the nerve atrophies. And so, like, I'm right on the fucking edge.
So you can't work?
Then it's over. I mean, what's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I have a baby at home. I got, you know, we're newly married, baby at home, bought a house.
Oh,
like,
my
the
God.
Whole nine. Like, living the dream, finally made it.
Yeah.
And back to
what was your mental state? You must
dude,
fucking...
I was all jacked up on steroids. I was like on 15. I was on 150 milligrams of prednisone, like this crazy experimental.
So you're out of your mind?
I was out of my fucking mind.
And your face?
That's why I learned the Hulk. I was walking around in a goddamn rage, you motherfucker!
Yeah.
How could you do this to me?
Yeah,
you
know?
Having a big issue with God.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Like yeah. Really.
But still not losing it in front of the baby so much.
No. The baby was losing it. We had a colicky baby. The baby's losing it in front of us nonstop, you know.
And you're
I'm walking around, falling down every 10 feet.
Really?
My equilibrium was all off.
Oh,
I'm falling
God.
Down, and I can't sleep, and I'm talking to God, and I'm rocking around, and I'm, why are you looking at me like that?
Yeah.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Yeah.
You think I'm ugly, don't you?
You're
going to leave me.
Yeah. Okay.
You're leaving me, aren't you? I'm damaged goods, aren't I?
Oh, no.
Dude, it was my poor baby.
Your wife?
You are
your
a
baby.
Saint.
Yeah.
My baby and my wife saved me. She saved me. She killed me and she saved me at once.
Yeah. And how long did it take?
So right at the mark where it was, and I'm like 6 months in almost, at the mark where it's like over.
Yeah.
You know, I start doing all these alternative things. I'm like, I'm off this. I'm getting off the steroids. This is insane.
Yeah.
And I start doing acupuncture. And literally, like after my sixth time acupuncture, I'm like this. I could just move the little tiniest bit in the left corner of my eye.
Yeah.
And I'm like, baby, baby, look, look, baby. And we both burst out into tears. We're like, it's coming back. We're in the car. And we were both just sobbing, tears of joy, because I can move.
Twitch your eye.
Twitch my eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
it came back. I mean, it's almost there. It's still screwed up, you know. It doesn't totally, like, work.
But the rest of the face is there, right?
The other half's great.
No, but there's still...
Yeah, it all came back. It's a little asymmetric.
Yeah.
Emma Stone said that was sexy and charming, and that's why they cast me.
Because of your asymmetrical face?
Yes.
No, but everything, you know, got back on track.
Yeah, it was kind of a crawl out, you know. Yeah. I was hearing he has AIDS. He's a drug addict. He had to go into rehab.
Oh, so you had to come out.
It was a little bit damaged goods, you know. And so it was kind of like starting over. And then I lost my hearing in my left ear, so I don't even need this there. I could go like that.
It's totally gone.
Gone.
And you just adapted.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a perfect A440. Like, I can tune my guitar to it.
Oh, really? There's a buzz?
Just,
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Always.
It's tinnitus all the time. I mean, I have to listen for it now. But, man, those first, that just getting used to it.
Yeah.
And the loss of stereo.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, buddy.
Dude, music in mono.
Yeah.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah.
I couldn't listen to music.
Well, you can kind of maybe move back and forth.
If I go like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've adjusted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if someone's like, Mark, you know, I go to those photo lines, someone's like, Mark, over here. I was like, I don't know I can't tell where sound's coming from, yeah, dude. I'm deaf in one ear. Give me a visual.
Yeah. You know? Wow. God damn it, man.
But it's cool. It's all cool. That was a deal I made. I was like, okay, God.
Give it back, and you can have my ear.
Yeah, let me live. Let me be a father for my kid, but you could have my ear.
It worked out.
I know. I was like, the moral is, be careful the deals you make.
Sure.
You know? Be careful. I could have said, let's just squeak by this. I'm young.
Yeah.
I got a big life ahead of me.
Yeah.
Just I'm throwing myself under mercy.
Yeah. But you negotiated.
I did.
Yeah.
You negotiate.
And now you got more kids, right?
I have three kids.
How old?
22, 18, and 16.
Oh, they're big.
A boy and two girls.
And they're all doing all right?
Yeah.
Wife's okay?
We had some rough, wife's amazing.
Oh, good.
We had some rough years there, but everyone came out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, could have been bad.
Family stuff?
Family.
The legacy?
The legacy. The family disease is, you know, it all.
But you seem
it
good.
It follows us, you know?
You seem good.
I'm great, man.
Yeah.
I'm, like, blessed.
Well, look, I honestly am rooting for you.
Thanks, pal.
Both in life and for the award.
Thanks,
whether because I know, like, you know, whatever anyone says about the Oscars. I mean, I want a prize. I'd like one prize.
I'd like a prize. I'd like that prize. I've gotten some other prizes.
Yeah.
I'd go out okay right now. That would be bad.
You know? But it'd be nice to have that prize.
That would be dope.
So what?
I figure if you get four nominations, it's literally like you got one.
Is it?
In my mind.
No, it's not.
Shit. You had to ruin that for
me. I'm sorry. You know it's
I'm
not
ending
true.
This. No,
he's storming out. It was great talking to you, pal.
You too, brother.
Yeah.
So good.
There you go. Good times. Huh? Yes. Poor Things is currently in theaters. Mark is nominated for Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars. Hang out for a minute.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Folks, speaking of Oscar nominees, we've got some stuff from my recent Paul Giamatti interview that didn't make it into the final episode. That's going up on the Full Marin tomorrow, along with other outtakes. But the thing is, like, you know, I remember the walking through the desert. It's beautiful. Harry Dean Stanton, Dean Stockwell, you know, like, it was kind of like an amazingly gorgeous movie. And then when it got to that part in the Peep Show, I thought, like, why is there a Sam Shepard play in the middle of this movie?
Yes,
and I detached from it. But that's where he unloads the entire narrative.
Yes.
And that's the part of the movie that I didn't register at all.
No, of course not. No, same thing. To me, that just seems like this blur of weirdness, beautiful weirdness.
That's right.
But I remember nothing else about it.
But that's where he says, like, you know, you find out what happened. The reason he was in the desert, he was married to this younger woman who he had a child with, and he was a drunken, jealous, crazy man. Yep. And she set him on fire.
Yeah.
She set him on fire, and he walked away.
It's a whole fucking thing. No idea. I have to watch it again. Had no idea.
To sign up for the Full Marin so you can get new bonus episodes every week, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. We've got two more episodes this week. That's right. As I said earlier, we have to squeeze in a bunch of Oscar nominees before the voting deadline. So that means an extra episode on Wednesday with America Ferrara from Barbie. And on Thursday, Killers of the Flower Moon cinematographer Rodrigo Prieto, also cinematographer of Barbie. And just a reminder, folks, before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Here's some guitar that's probably familiar. Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere.